This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and you are listening to Newsmakers, where we talk about local stuff here for the Mid-Valley. We talk about Salem and Kaiser, Marion County, Polk County, and all those things that affect you more locally. You know what I like about Newsmakers, Dave?
Tell me.
I like that we're not talking about some of that national stuff that just raises your blood pressure and drives you crazy.
It does.
We're going to leave that up to the national pundits and things like that. Occasionally, we'll dive into a topic that affects those things. But for the most part, we like to talk about what's going on in your neighborhood, what's going on in your city council, what's going on in your economy right here. Local talk here on KYKN. So that being said, we're going to talk about something that is a national topic, but how it affects us right here.
Your pocketbook.
Yes.
Big time.
We're going to talk about the rental market, availability of rental housing. This is going to tie into, you know, jobs. It ties into the homeless. It ties into affordable housing. It ties into workforce. All of these things, the availability and the current market conditions of people finding a place to live.
Basically.
Right? Yeah. And if they're going to live here, are they going to be able to drive anywhere? Or do you have to swim across the bridge, right?
You need to be a good swimmer.
So I brought into the studio one of my friends. I brought in one of those experts. I feel like the guy in Pawn Stars. Well, let me bring a friend down here. And you know, he's an expert in this. And we'll have him talk to you. But, so Gabe Johansson, he's with SMI Commercial Real Estate. He is a multifamily broker extraordinaire. How's that? How about that? Gabe, welcome to the studio.
Thanks, Brent. Good
so
to be here.
Dave is an all-around great guy and a great resource and a volume of knowledge. The reason he got on my radar, I saw recently that you had written an article about rent controls,
mm-hmm.
rent control and what that does to the market and how this actually plays out.
Sure.
Right? Because they were talking about that at the legislature, actually, and in a Portland market specifically. Hey, let's look at rent controls to try to solve the crisis that we created.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to get to that, folks. So hold on. Hold on, wait till you hear about that. But let's get to know Gabe a little bit. SMI Commercial Real Estate, what do you guys do?
We are a full-service real estate brokerage. We service the Willamette Valley, and we do deals throughout the state. We handle multifamily transactions. That's our specialty. And then also, you know, all sorts of asset classes, including residential.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so commercial real estate. I divide that in my brain into office and commercial and industrial and multifamily. Is that
mm-hmm.
fair enough?
Yeah, retail.
But
mm-hmm.
I think of you as a multifamily guy.
Yep, most do.
Okay, and you're all right with that.
That's my wheelhouse.
So when you're doing things and you say other parts of the state, is that because you have a buyer here and you're going out and finding things for them?
Yes, typically.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're going to represent the buyer sometimes. You're going to represent the seller sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. All right. So how long have you been doing this?
Since 2011.
And why did you get into this?
Well, that's a funny question. I started off my career in the automotive business, Johansson Salem Nissan, and actually filmed some, or not filmed, but recorded some spots right here at 1430. KYKN.
Yeah. Well, that radio voice going on.
Yeah, right. He's practicing.
Yeah. And so we sold our dealership in 2011, and it was time to do something else. And so I was given an offer to get into real estate, and I took it. And yeah, I love it.
Transitioning here. And here he is, SMI Commercial Real Estate. So tell us a little bit, since this is your world, what's our local market like if someone wants to buy an apartment building, a fourplex, a duplex, or sell one?
Okay, so from an investor standpoint, market is still very tight. There's not a lot of inventory available, although that is sort of changing now. I think that kind of segues into our rent control topic, but there are more sellers today than there have been in the last 7 years. So we are seeing more activity than we've seen in a long time. I think there's a lot of people that have decided that they either just want out because they don't want to deal with the legislation that keeps coming down. It gets tighter and tighter. They don't want to deal with the management issues. There's also some folks out there that feel that we are about to go into the next recession. And so they would like to get out now early rather than get out a little late. So there are more sellers. That's what we didn't have before. We've always had buyers. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of buyers. I always tell people that I've got about a 100-to-1 ratio of buyers to sellers.
Really? So a lot of people maybe wanting to put their money into real estate instead of the stock market. Right? Maybe they want to go bonds and this and that. And a lot of people that like real estate as an investment. So
multifamily is a commodity asset, and it's really the darling of the investment world. It's a very safe place to put your money.
Because there'll always be someone who needs a place to live needs to pay some rent.
That's right.
All right. So what about the supply? And this is going to drive a little bit of talk about what it costs to buy a multifamily unit, and what it costs to rent. A lot of our listener right now, they're renters, and the supply is going to affect how much they're paying in rent.
That's exactly right. So part of the problem that we have is clearly a supply and demand issue. We need more supply. About 5 years ago, HUD released a report that said Oregon was about 60,000 units short of where we needed for housing. Today, that number is closer to 100,000. So regardless of we've had an increase in development over those last 5 years, but it has not been able to keep pace with the need. So the demand is very high.
Why aren't people building more?
Well, there's a few reasons. One is, the land is being used in other ways. So it gets harder and harder for a place like Salem. There are not a lot of easy, low-hanging fruit type pieces of land where you can just step in and say, hey, let's build some apartments there. So you're going for conditional use permits. You're trying to get zoning changes. There's just a lot of barriers to finding the actual dirt to build on. Once you find it, then you have to go through all the layers of bureaucracy to get the units out of the ground. And that's very expensive and timely. And it's really, I think, the hardest thing for developers is to have that crystal ball of what is the market going to look like when these units are ready to be rented. And that's a 2 or 3 year window. It's very difficult to see that far into the future.
So, folks, if you're listening, especially if you work for the state, if you're a legislator, if you are a policymaker, the message that Gabe Johansson of SMI Real Estate just gave us is that regulations cost. There is a cost to regulating. And if there's a shorter path to make money developing, like a single family house, like a subdivision, like maybe a strip mall, if there's a shorter direction, you do not have to wait 2 years to get your project out of the ground, that's where the money's going to go. All right? That's what I heard Gabe say. Is what you heard Gabe
say? Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So the harder you make it to make multifamily, the less multifamily gets built, and then we have a pricing housing crisis. At least in Portland. So in this market, do you see rents stabilizing or continue to increase?
Rents are continuing to increase. In the Salem market, we've started to see a little bit of a ceiling at about $1,000 per unit. Just a few years ago, the average two-bed was closer to $700. So that number has increased substantially. But right at about the $1,000 level, it seems to have stopped. We've had a little bit of time getting off of that. So we're starting to see rents now for a two-bedroom go, just standard kind of 70s, not new inventory, starting to see it just break above the $1,000 barrier, I would call it. So I think that, just going back to supply and demand, if we don't have more units, that is going to continue to climb. And we are seeing it. It is still growing, not as rapidly as it has been in the last few years.
All right. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the legislature and what they were trying to do with capping rents and so forth. And Gabe Johansson's opinion on where rent controls lead us. And it does affect all of us. Even if you're a homeowner, it infects the entire region and its economy. So hold on. You're listening to Newsmakers with Brent and Dave on 1430. KYKN Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
And welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. My name is Brenton DeHart here with Dave Warren. And in our studio today, Gabe Johansson, SMI Commercial Real Estate. He's my expert. He's my local expert in multifamily and multifamily housing and the market. And if you want to buy or sell, SMI is the place to go. Now, the legislature, they stopped doing their damage at the end of June. So they went home and stopped hurting us. But so now it's September, pushing October, but we're still talking about potential legislation. We're talking about things that that is on the radar and things that have been passed. We were talking during the break with Gabe about House Bill 2020. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so House Bill 2020 is designed to change the zoning so that each city will get a certain amount of time to convert all of their single family lots to take up to 4 residential units. Some jurisdictions have said they're going to jump on that right away. Others have said they don't know how they're going to get there. So we will potentially see part of the problem for housing be solved by more inventory. Now there's going to be a lot of, arms up in the air over this. So we all want more housing, but maybe not right next door to me in my house, right? I mean, that's...
So if I'm living in a single-family subdivision that has been zoned, for single-family, can somebody tear down a house down the street and build 4 units?
Sure.
They'll be able to do that. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of retro overlay.
Yeah, I believe this is unprecedented. I don't believe that a state has ever said statewide that every... jurisdiction had to change their zoning to do something like this. So it'll be very interesting to see how that shakes out.
Well, going back to talking about what I promised before the break and talking about price controls and rent control, Senate Bill 608 mm-hmm. had elements of that. Where do you think that's taken us? What effect is that bill going to have? And where would rent control take us?
Well, first off, Senate Bill 608 was passed on the guise of being rent stabilization rather than rent control. So it's slightly different than some of the other rent controls that we've seen around the country. Either way, there has never been a rent control that has done what it was supposed to do. So it doesn't work. I think it's been proven already that it doesn't work, and I think it'll be proven again that it doesn't work. It's interesting to see that Oregon set the precedence as the first state to pass a statewide rent control law when we had a law specifically stating that in our Constitution that we would never have rent control in our state for very specific reasons. Like, yeah, the founding fathers of our state knew that that was something that we probably shouldn't be doing. And it was written in that it was actually illegal for us to pass rent control laws. So that had to be overturned. This all started when Portland first passed their rent controls, and it was they tried to overturn that as it was against the Oregon Constitution. So now we have rent control. We have rent stabilization, 7% annually, plus the Western Region CPI, which is inflation. Right now, that number is 3.1%. So a landlord today can raise rents 10.1% per year. Most landlords don't do that. Most landlords, that's more than they would ever raise in a given year. So it doesn't truly upset the apple cart. But part of Senate Bill 608 that was kind of the Trojan horse really is at the same time they outlawed no-cause evictions. So Dave and I were talking before the show, out-of-state investors and other investors were coming into the Portland market primarily, and they were finding these properties that were underperforming. They were run down or they had low rents, and they were buying them and raising the rents dramatically, $500, $600, $700 per unit, or they were just evicting everybody and just rehabbing the property and renting it out again. Our legislators called that price gouging. And so this is really where rent control comes from, is many of those that happened, although it was a small percentage of projects in our state, those were very newsworthy projects that happened. So they ended up, on the cover of the newspaper, and mm-hmm. you've got an elderly lady who has nowhere where to go. Her rent has just gone up. She's on a fixed income. Where does she move? I mean, it really tears on your heartstrings, right? Mm-hmm. So that's really, it was those types of stories that pushed this legislation to go across statewide. They didn't want people to come in because our population was growing so quickly and we had such a supply and demand problem. Rents were going up too fast, and they wanted to try to find a way to put a cap on that.
Okay. And yeah, it kind of goes back to, if you regulate it and you discourage development, or, and also goes back to the discussion we were having on Newsmakers last week, is if you want to have some say into some private property and what happens there, then you need to buy the private property. Mm. That's a philosophical thing, but it's like, well, they shouldn't be able to do that, and but it's their property. And so if you don't want that to happen on the property state, then use your affordable housing money and buy the property. Mm-hmm. And create affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. My philosophical 2 cents worth to jump in there. So where does that lead us? Like you said, 10% is not something people are typically raising anyway. Sounds like we have a statewide solution for a spot problem, mm-hmm. right? For a small spot problem of instances, we have now a statewide precedent-setting legislation.
Mm-hmm.
So where's it heading?
Well... We sort of can see where it's heading. Everybody's concerned about that number now changing. Of course, tenant advocacy groups and renters were all very upset that the number was set so high. Rather than waiting to see what rent control did for Oregon, California yesterday passed their statewide rent control law. They're at 5% plus CPI. So They didn't wait to see the effect that it had on us. They just said they passed it, and they sort of copied the legislation, but they said they were going to one-up us, and they went 5%. We believe that Washington will be next, and that number may even be lower. The concern is now that the foot is in the door, so to speak, that number is going to compress over time because now we have rent control.
We're talking to Gabe Johansson, CMI Commercial Real Estate. He handles multifamily and all sorts of other commercial real estate transactions, but definitely a specialist and very knowledgeable when it comes to multifamily housing. So I've said this on Newsmakers before. I went to college in the early 80s, and I'm in business school, in a very good business school at that. And they are teaching at the time that rent control models had failed, that this is a failed experiment. And they said, they did this, here's New York City, here's the case study, it resulted over time in this happening, and they were all negative, right? So it resulted in slums, it resulted in lack of investment, it resulted in a lower amount of inventory, it resulted in so on and so forth. Then they said rent controls, and I didn't go, Gabe, in case you're curious, I did not go to a conservative university. Exactly the opposite. So that's a failed experiment, and you said it doesn't really work and it fails. I want to get back to, what's your crystal ball saying if we keep going down this line? What are going to be the market results?
Well, there will be less inventory. One of the caveats to SB 608 is that it only applies to units that are 15 years or older. So it kind of opens a window for developers. Developers really have a different problem when it comes to, trying to bring units out of the ground. There's the barriers of entry of raising SDC costs, taxes, all of the different bonds and charges that they have going into an apartment unit. That number keeps growing. The other thing that's happened within the last 5 years is the cost to build an apartment unit has doubled. Essentially. So between construction and labor costs, it costs a lot more to actually build that unit. So there are different problems for developers than there are for investors. From an investor standpoint, if you already own apartments and you're already close to market rent, it really doesn't affect you too much. As a matter of fact, it probably benefits an owner of apartments because now nobody will want to get behind the curve on their rents. They'll want to stay close to market. And if we know that number is set every year, what you can raise your rents, you can almost bet that every landlord is just going to raise their rents across the board once a year at that number, which will be higher. So tenants will see a higher rent increase year by year than they normally would have, I believe.
Senate Bill 608, and you made a very good point. There's that 15-year, 15 years or older, and that allows a developer to kind of price low to fill up their units, right? Maybe under market for a period of time, and then be able to make it up. Right. And they've got that 15-year span to get them up to market kind of thing.
And because it takes so long to build, a developer may want to sell. But by the time they get those units finished, the market might not be in a place where they want to sell. So that allows them a little bit of runway to be able to sell during a time where they feel like it's the right time to sell their product.
So between the 10% allowed increase and exempting units that are 15 years or younger, is this rent control light?
Yes, I believe it is. They passed it and felt that both sides did not like it. Both sides of the argument were not happy with how it turned out. Hmm. So, there were the side that, I would call it the landlord side or the conservative side did not want rent control at all. From the tenant side, everybody was tired of, receiving very large rent increases. And so, from a tenant advocacy side, they wanted something much more stringent, closer mm-hmm. to, 1 or 2 or 3%, something like that.
Wow. Holy cow. All right. So, the next question is going to be about some cases and what happens if we continue to go down this road to our inventory. And without the inventory, then we don't have affordable housing. And are we shooting ourselves in foot? Right? That's where I'm going with Gabe Johansson of SMI Commercial Real Estate. We'll be right back on Newsmakers with Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart. One of my favorite topics is our ability to have a place to live.
Yeah, I think every topic is your favorite.
Housing market. It is a disease. I find myself curious about most everything.
Everything.
It's torture to live inside my cranium. So, but when it comes to livability in the Mid-Valley, being able to have a place to live, how many people live here? What's our density? What is the cost of living? Can people who work here that do the work that we need have support the tax base? Can they have a place to live? All of these things. They intersect in the housing and the rental market. So Gabe Johansson, SMI Commercial Real Estate. If you haven't met Gabe, say hi to him down the street. You see him walking down the street sometimes downtown, and he's the guy. His head's a little shiny. He's a good-looking, trim guy. Stays very healthy. He and his wife are going to come on the show at another time and going to talk about their groundbreaking work and putting Salem on the market for health bars, live bar.
Yeah, nutrition bars.
Nutrition bar, which is fantastic. If you didn't see the newspaper coverage, we're going to talk about our Newsmakers if I can get them both in the same room at the same time. But for today, we're talking about the market. And there's people listening who are renters, there's people listening who have rentals, there's people listening who have neither, but it all affects them. What is going on with the vacancies in the area? I mean, if someone owns an apartment building or if they buy an apartment building, are they going to be full?
1.8% is our vacancy rate in Salem right now.
Wow, that's tiny.
Lincoln City's 0.2.
And historically?
A healthy market's 5%.
Wow.
We've been around three or under for the last 7 years.
Folks, so if you have 100 units of apartments, 1.5 of them is vacant. And you know what? That doesn't even, it barely even touches on what it costs to turn over something if somebody moves.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because it's going to be vacant while a person moves out and you clean it up and re-rent it. That's incredibly low.
Very low.
So that is also driving prices.
Absolutely.
People can raise prices and the apartment's going to rent up.
That is correct.
All right. So we were talking before the break, early in the hour, about Senate Bill 608, Rent Control Light, I called it. And of course, also House Bill 2020, these things that are happening. How is that generating activity in the market as far as buying and selling or not?
In the second quarter, we had what I call a pipeline shadow. So as everybody was waiting to see how this was going to shake out, the rent control thing came down, and it happened very, very quickly. The voters said they didn't want rent control. We voted it down not too long before they passed it. California, by the way, did the same thing. So they passed these as emergency measures that need to be passed. So that steer me back to the, you're wondering how this affects the market in terms of
having buyers and sellers and people willing to buy, people willing to build.
So in the second quarter, multifamily closings dropped by 38%.
Wow.
Out-of-state investment dropped to 0%. So the out-of-state investors stopped coming because they didn't know what was going to happen. Now that we know that rent control is there, I believe that a lot of those out-of-state investors have not come back. Of course, many of them were from California. Now they have rent control as well. So we'll see what happens there. I would say it dropped significantly. We're starting to see more activity in the marketplace now, and a lot of that is driven by the sellers we talked about coming back, and I think this is a boon for local investors because currently there's more inventory to choose from, which is creating some competition on the sell side, and you're not fighting against a lot of the buyers that were coming into our market. So I think local investors should their ears should perk up if they're listening to this. They should be out looking for some more inventory.
Right now, there's somebody sitting in their car, I hope, that really needs to go somewhere else, but they're hanging on there because Gabe just said something unbelievable, that the number of buyers from outside the state of Oregon who are willing to come into the state and buy multifamily went to zero. Is that what you said?
That's correct.
That's what I heard you say. Yes. It went to zero. And the reason it went to zero is because the legislature is introducing uncertainty into a marketplace. Uncertainty is not good for business, people. It's why, was it Kitzhaber signed the deal with Nike about rent, about tax increases and that? Because Nike needed some certainty, things that they can plan on for their growth and expansion. Uncertainty is death to business. So we have money not willing to come to the state.
Correct.
You're basically saying, hey, make sure you don't invest in Oregon. So the upside of that, as Gabe was saying, for his local buyers, there's more opportunities because there's fewer competition,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
All right. I understood it correctly.
More deals to be had and less people to fight with over them.
It's nice to have Gabe here as an expert just to fire me up, to pontificate upon the political realities of it without him having to alienate anybody.
Jeez.
Thank
it's
you.
It's true. Yeah. I don't want to get my guests in trouble here. But that's the point, folks. You know, you rent control, and if it gets tighter and tighter and tighter, then fewer people build. And you get this vicious cycle. And this leads to this question. Is Oregon's public policy going to have the effect that they want it to have? Is Oregon's public policy going to lead them to the goal of having affordable places for people in the workforce to live? It seems like it's not.
Do they ever?
Welcome to Newsmakers, folks. Gabe Johansson, the new host.
Nice.
Yeah, that's the thing is, you know, we're going to pass this, and our goal is that. But sometimes it just goes backwards. So rent control, we want to keep the rents down, or stabilization, rent stabilization, we're going to keep it down by, and therefore create, but then you drive the market, and then there's less supply, and there's higher rents, and you've really just shot yourself in the foot, in public policy-wise.
Well, the sad thing is that they really are trying to help those folks out there that are struggling, and they're having a hard time making their rent already, and the rents keep going up. The problem is that this law will most likely hurt the exact person that they are trying to help. And it might actually help those that they were trying to stop from gaining so much profit off of these folks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there will always be ways to game the system and from both sides. But I think that rents are going, I mean, we can see now almost every investor, if they're coming in and looking at a deal, they'll say, well, we know that we can probably push rents close to 10% per year as long as inflation stays around 3%. So, you know, in a market where you'd normally come in and say, well, you know, I'm gonna move my rents 3-5%. Well, now you're gonna try to, you know, I think it eliminates the competition you need for a healthy market, and it starts to put it puts landlords on the same team instead of pitting them against one another. I mean, I think that's what you don't want to do. You want to foster competition in order to drive the rents back down for your tenants.
Yeah, I get that. Because if you know what your competitor is going to do, if you're selling shoes and you don't know what your competitor is going to do, you really can't jack your prices up 25% and be floating out there in the wind. But if you know everybody else who's selling shoes is going to jack it 25%, then hey, let's go and boom, and the consumer is going to pay a higher price. because there's no collusion in the marketplace. But what you're saying, Gabe, is really the legislature has taken that collusion and institutionalized it for us.
Right? Yeah.
They're like, oh, you've just created a venue that all multifamily owners can hear and communicate in, is this is how much we can raise rents.
Yeah.
Right? Scary. Unintended consequences, folks. All right, let's talk a little bit about what you do, because I know you make a bit. You make a living out of buying and selling.
Mm-hmm.
So, is it a good investment? Is it good investments to jump in?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Of course it is. What are you, stupid?
Yeah, I mean, I'm an apartment guy, so this is what I do. I buy and sell, and I represent my clients to do the same. There are deals to be had. Right now is a great time to be a seller because the prices are so high. If you're not going to sell, you should be refinancing because rates are incredibly low. Pull some money out and go do another deal. There are deals out there still, though, to be had. And I think that the multifamily is an excellent investment.
So there's a lot of lenders lending to buy multifamily?
Absolutely.
Because sometimes that gets tight and it's hard to find.
They love it. Lending is tightening a bit on office and retail and industrial and other asset types. But in multifamily, they all have a lot of money to put into multifamily and they want it there.
So we've scared a lot of out-of-state investment dollars, or the legislature did. Is it going to start swinging back and coming back into play?
Yes, absolutely. And it already is. Now that we know what the law is, at least for now, we can underwrite a deal and we can say this is what's going to happen, whereas before we couldn't do that. Now on September 30th, here in just a week or two, they will release the new CPI number and we will all know what the rent increase can be for next year. So, you know, everybody will gear up and it'll be, you know, interesting to see if owners decide they want to raise rents right now, right before the end of the year, in hopes that they get a little more, or if they'll wait until that number comes out. I think it's going to go down. My guess is it'll probably drop about a half a point or so.
So if you're listening and one, you're a Democrat, and two, you're a renter, you may want to call your representation, your House of Representatives or your senator, and say, are you sure you guys know what you're doing?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I'm hearing it's not good for you. I'm hearing that may not accomplish the goals that they set out to do. Are you sure you know what you're doing? But if you're in a position to maybe invest, this is looks like a really good opportunity. So as most of you know, I have sold investments in the past. I'm investment licensed, and then there's the whole stock market thing where we put our money in our retirement thing. But real estate is one of those places where something can appreciate, meaning worth more over time, without you having to pay taxes on it every year. It's deferred revenue, right? Deferred taxation.
Yeah, we call it phantom income.
Phantom income. Yeah. It's how that multifamily thing increases over time, but you don't have to pay taxes on it till you are selling it.
Yeah, you're depreciating. Right? You have cash flow that's coming in, and you're depreciating the asset, and so you can be making, you know, you can be making a nice cash flow and not paying taxes.
What we like here is to send we don't want to send any more to Congress than we have to, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to send any more to be spent by Nancy Pelosi and Kate Brown than we have to. We're not cheating. We don't advocate cheating. But if there are tools that the government gives us to defer our taxation, then that makes it for an even better, a better investment. All right. Thank you, Gabe Johansson. We're going to have to go. We're going to be talking to Sergeant Mike and Cowboy Ron. And boy, they've got quite a topic today. Gabe is with SMI Commercial Real Estate. Call him, call them. If you want any questions answered about the multifamily or commercial real estate market, you're looking to buy, you're looking to sell, and we sure appreciate your expertise. I appreciate you stepping out and sharing it with us.
It was fun.
We'll have you on again. Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back on Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
The segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape. Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart. We want to thank Gabe Johansson for joining us on the show. I hope you found that interesting. I think it's not just interesting, but critically important to our livability here in the Mid-Valley. Joining us in the studio today, as we have them once a week, we've got Sergeant Mike. You heard of him, right? Hi, Sergeant Mike.
Hey, bud.
And
how are you?
All his cahoots friend here, Cowboy Ron. And tell us how their view on the world and what it should be like sometimes.
Oh, thank
you,
Brent.
Yeah, nice to have you here. So we were talking during the break, and I guess you want to paint us a picture here, Sergeant Mike.
Yeah,
paint us a picture.
I do, and it has to do with the Democratic candidates for president that are coming up. I watch their how they negotiate and how they present themselves and look for content and, you know, in what they're doing. And before we bought KYKN Radio, I worked in and out of the Far East for several years and negotiated with people on buying and selling product and having things manufactured or just a variety of things. And primarily it was in Taiwan and Hong Kong and the Philippines. But in Taiwan and in Hong Kong were the sharpest people, the most entrepreneurial people I've ever seen in my life. It's like they felt the Grim Reaper was going to come over any day now in the form of Red China, and now they are coming. But if Biden and his gaffes got in the same room with one of those people, they would slice those people, they would slice Biden up into little bitty pieces, and he wouldn't even know what happened. And they talk to Uncle Trump, and Trump just says, no, I ain't doing that. And they go, yeah, but, you know, Obama's not here anymore. And I just look at that, and terrible representation.
What do you think, Cowboy Ron? You think Obama did a good job in negotiating with China?
Oh, no. I'll put it in a kind of a cowboy term. They put a bull ring in Obama's nose, and they led him around with a length of chain.
Yeah.
And there was never a no said. It was wishy-washy. We start giving money. We were frightened. Yeah, during that era, we were frightened. My boy Trump goes over and says no, and look what's happened. We're not in the war. They're buying our beef. They're buying our goods. Yes, we're making a trade deal. And the stock market is going whoopee.
So you don't think that Elizabeth Warren's going to have a really good effect then she gets elected?
Well, I
don't think she's going to get elected. But
No. I can't even comprehend that. We've talked about this a number of times, and I kind of sound like an old record, but you cannot start on a platform. And to our youth today, they're on a candidate's platform. We call that a platform. And their platform is, we're going to have an idea of what I'm going to give to you and what my plan is. Well, Trump boy's got a good platform. And that platform, if you look from the beginning to now, he said what he was going to do, and he's doing it. Directly or indirectly. Poor Pocahontas, how in the devil is she going to say when we're going to say, we're going to give you health care? Well, who in God's good world is going to pay for the health care?
Yeah.
And we got the biggest governmental Affordable Care Act that you've seen in history. We've got it, and now it's killing us.
Man, you're a little bit radical, I think.
Am I?
Yeah, and proud of it.
I am.
Yeah.
And well, so, I like the bull ring idea.
That draws quite a picture, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's a very common picture. Bull ring, it's a good deterrent, put it in your nose and control them.
Yeah, there you go.
So I think one of the issues with Obama, and I think I try to put myself in Ron's space, Ron's headspace here, cowboy, is that Obama didn't think America deserved to be treated well. And it was all right to be taken advantage of.
Yeah, he was a politician.
And people wonder, how did Trump? I mean, he's a little bit of a loon. So how does he get elected? Well, he got elected because he said, I'll look after Americans first.
Yeah,
that's right.
We are worth it.
Yeah, and now they think that saying and that attitude is a race cry. you know, of white supremacy. And he's like, no, I'm going to look after Americans first.
Yeah.
And he goes to China. And it's like, is that good for China? Or is it good for the United States? Is that what I heard you saying?
Yeah, Brett, that's a good, really good statement, because the one side thinks that he's a radical. He doesn't talk right. He doesn't speak right. And I think he's quite refreshing because he's very simple and he says things commonly.
Yes, we know what he means.
And he's not a politician. I mean, here's Bernie Sanders saying, well, it's going to cost $31 trillion to start the health care program. Raise his hands up in the air, and everybody should be equal. Well, we're not equal. Some of us work, and some don't work.
You know, that there's a saying back when was in communism in Russia. They said, well, over there, everybody's equal. Except some are just more equal than others.
You know? I like that. Yeah.
So when, Sergeant Mike, when you were traveling and you'd go to the Far East, et cetera, and you're doing business, you said you felt they were really sharp and entrepreneurial.
In Hong Kong and in Taiwan, very much so. They're just sharp people. They wanted to go to work. They loved what they were doing, and they did it well. And they would hustle, and they would do things quickly and accurately. And, you know, that's how Hong Kong, in fact, got its reputation over the last couple of hundred years, was it was a free marketplace where people could go and exchange money, goods, all kinds of things like that, because of the environment, the free environment of it all. And it was a port city and all those things. And that's how it became what it became.
Do you think if you went back today and you're representing a U.S. business interest, in, whether you're going to China, you're going to Shanghai, or you're going to Kuala Lumpur, you're going to find the similar kind of attitudes of trade?
No, not at all. They're so protective now, and it's just all about taking advantage of you and them winning. And it's the antithesis of free trade. It's so conditional, and because you're going from a free society into a socialist society, and those two don't mix.
And do you think that for Trump, that's the biggest problem in discussing trade? Is you know, they believe in market manipulation, they believe in government subsidies and unfair playing fields. And so when China is one thing, but Japan and South Korea are another?
Yes, they are. And
do you think the Democrats understand that?
No, I don't think they care. I really don't. I think there's things they just don't care about. America's made all this money, and no matter what we do, things are going to be okay, and they're not.
Very well said, Sarge. I totally agree. The great thing about the United States is free trade, free enterprise, and we had the best communication system in the world, AT&T. Ralph Nader comes in, split it up, now it's terrible.
Yeah. There you go.
But we all have cell phones. That was Newsmakers, folks. We'll do it again tomorrow. Thanks to Sergeant Mike and Cowboy Ron.
This has been Lynn Fenton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.